Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Greg Comparic.
Welcome back to the show, Greg.
So hi, baritone. Thank you so much. Baritone. Yeah, I have a cold right now, and I kind of just woke up, so I'm not going to be the best guest this week, but I'm here.
Right, you're on the West Coast, and so this is incredibly obscenely early for you, but we dragged you out of bed because we're monsters.
For a Friday, though, I feel like, I don't know. Do you guys, like, wake up later and later as the week goes on?
Yeah, I would say so.
So, like, Monday's pretty normal. Yeah, like, Monday I wake up at a normal time, and then Tuesday I actually wake up earliest, and then it's a steady decline from there. Anyway, we've got a fun episode today. Anthony, do you want to tell them what the episode's going to be about?
That's right. We have a theoretically fun episode. What we're going to do is we're going to do our normal sort of quick recap of some of the week's streaming news. And then instead of reviewing a new show or movie from Netflix or Hulu or Amazon, we're just going to do a quick rundown of some of the movies that we've been watching for this summer, basically. What did we decide we were going to call it, Jordan?
Summer Movie Madness!
Madness, madness, madness.
So we're going to talk about Solo, A Quiet Place, Incredibles 2, Ocean's 8, and we've talked a little bit about Avengers Infinity War in a past episode, but you know, I think we're going to touch on it anyway because it's the biggest movie of the summer.
Because we can't go... Okay. And because we can't go through a single episode without someone bringing up something about comic books. And by someone, I mean Anthony. Let's start with the news then. Also speaking of comic books, there's comics news, right? DC something?
So DC... DC Entertainment, which is basically DC Comics, plus, you know, a little bit of they're doing work with the TV and the movie side and everything. They have announced this new streaming service called DC Universe, which is all about DC Comics content. Some of this was known before, but it's basically that they're going to be these original shows that they're making just for this service, including a live action show called Titans, which is based on the Teen Titans. There's also going to be like a library of like older movies, like the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. There's going to be a library of digital comics, and then there'll be like sort of like an online community and a storefront. And so that is launching in beta in August, and then a full launch in the fall. And I guess to me, it's sort of interesting just because it's like when people talk about these like different streaming services, and like you can be like super broad, like Netflix or something that's more focused. And this DC Universe thing seems like the most extreme example of that, like super focused, you know, really niche thing. But if I'm being honest, if it's not super expensive, I'll probably sign up for it.
Yeah, but like you are not a representation of the mainstream by any stretch. I guess mainstream is everybody's into comics, right? Am I the weirdo?
I think that there's a lot of people who are not into it for sure. And I think also this is something. I mean, part of the point of I think launching a service like this is not to make it, you know, the thing that everyone wants, but for like I don't know, let's say the 100,000 people who like you know. Regularly read like superhero comics, make something that they just that they're gonna sign up for and pay for every month rather than something that's for like a general audience.
What do we think this has to do with in terms of like DC versus Marvel, right? Because people like Marvel more, right? That's the general consensus. I'm coming in as like a noob essentially. So everybody likes Marvel and everybody like shits on DC all the time, right?
Yeah, that's fair. I would say that that's generally true. I mean, especially on the movie side, where you know Marvel movies have just done really, really well and are generally you know well liked, whereas the DC movies did well for a while financially, but like everyone hated them, and then the most recent one was a big disappointment, which was supposed to be their Avengers. And then on the comic side, Justice League, which is worth seeing, even though it's a mess, but. The comic side, like Marvel has generally done better than DC for the last, you know, basically in our lifetimes, although I think DC has actually kind of come back a bit in the last few years. Is that fair, Greg?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think it's if nothing else, Marvel has little bit more momentum here, and so it's going to have a bigger fan base for longer. And so I think this idea that Marvel is the better of the two is going to continue on for a little bit. There's not much we can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's our place to do something about it, but DC. So I guess my more specific question is, does this feel like a way that DC is trying to kind of amp up that competition a little bit and give people who maybe saw a movie or have been reading the comics like an extra outlet for their nerdy needs?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And especially with these new shows, which, by the way, I'd be surprised. Is there any word on if these shows are going to be like exclusive to this service? Because that seems kind of bizarre, just because shows cost so much to make.
No, that's a fair point. I think that everything they've indicated so far is that they're exclusive. You know, that in the same way that I guess like a Netflix show is exclusive, that maybe at some point they may put out DVDs or something. But these are not shows being made for the CW, which is where a lot of the other DC TV shows like The Flash and Arrow have gone. These are shows that are made for this service. I don't think you'll see them on traditional TV at any point.
Yeah, okay. Like, because the advantage that something like Netflix has is that there's some degree of serendipity there, like accidental discovery. You know, like if I'm just on Netflix and I'm watching something, I stumble into some other Netflix original content, and that's how they keep me on the service, is just constantly falling into something else. But with something like that's so niche with DC, I'm already into the DC universe, and I'm probably already into certain aspects of the DC universe. And so it's not like I'm going to stumble into something totally unrelated or something totally brand new to me. So it's there's less opportunity for them to grow accidentally.
Yeah, this seems like something that's just all about, hello, you are somebody who probably spends a significant amount of money per month with us already, and we are now going to find another way to like formalize the fact that you are giving us some of your money every month. It's hard to see this as a way that significantly grows the DC audience. It's more about, you know, solidifying the loyalty and getting more revenue from the people who are already hardcore fans, if I were to guess.
Yeah, I would predict that in the long run, this service might get the shows earlier, and then they'll probably go to Hulu or something, because it would blow my mind if they kept these shows exclusively to DC Universe.
Yeah, when you put it that way and you think about just the math of how many people are likely to sign up for this service, it does seem like they've got to find some other way to monetize them. Cool. Well, let's move on. Yeah. So I think the other piece of news we wanted to talk about was about Apple, which I know we've talked a lot about their content announcements to the point where it gets a little bit numbing. But this is actually more about, because I think Apple keeps making these announcements that we're doing this show. And what hasn't been totally clear is what form that's at, how that's actually going to reach the consumer. To the point where, I mean, I think everyone sort of assumed they were going to do some sort of paid TV service like Netflix. But then the information reported this week that what might also happen is that instead of these separate subscriptions, what Apple's really going to emphasize is a single subscription where you're basically getting all the media from Apple, where you get the TV, you get the music, and then you also get news because, you know, they recently acquired a news aggregation startup whose name I cannot remember right now, and they're, you know, basically they clearly have some plans for some subscription stuff on the news side as well, so that they might just bring it all together into one package.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. It is a very Apple thing to do, and in this market where, so in terms of music, right, Spotify seems to have a bit of a lead there. In terms of video entertainment, I would say that Netflix has the lead, and then following up is Hulu and maybe Amazon Prime Video, you know, just in terms of like presence in people's brains. And from a content standpoint, I can't think of what Apple's advantage is here. But if they can bundle everything together and say, hey, look, like you want movies, you want videos anyway, so here you go, here's this, but you also get music, bam. You also get news, which I suspect has a much smaller following than movies or music in a case like this. But to be able to bundle all that together gives them a leg up that no one else can really match easily.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, again, like we've talked about this so many times that it, like Anthony said, I don't know what I'm saying anymore, but I think that it will all come down to like the the shows? Like, what show gets people so amped and like, oh, you haven't seen it yet? You haven't seen it yet? Like, Handmaids did it for Hulu. Obviously, there are a bunch on Netflix. It's hard to even remember what the first was. But, like, you know, Orange is the New Black and shows like that that just, you have to see it. Like, you have to get Netflix. You have to get Hulu to see this stuff. And that is the, I think, what's going to be the tipping point as opposed to having the 3-in-1 type situation. Although in very Apple fashion, there are a lot of people that are already subscribed to Apple Music. I think I subscribed to Apple Music to see, like, I don't know, like a Beyonce music video or something, like, years ago, and just haven't canceled it. And, like, noticing, you know, like, noticing that, like, oh yeah, there's video here too, like, there's movies here too. I think, like, that is, like, a good kind of starting off point, but I don't know if that bundling is going to be the real kicker. I think the kicker is going to be whether or not this original content's good, as it should be, you know.
I think that's fair, and that ultimately, like, definitely in there, I have, as we've been covering a lot of these content announcements, as I sort of think ahead to when this actually launches, there's been a part of me that's like, oh man, I don't want to sign up for another streaming video service. But at the same time, I know that if there was a show that everyone was talking about and I was super excited about, I would definitely suck it up and sign up for it. Partly, you know, assuming we're still, you know, still covering this stuff and still doing the podcast, I would kind of have to. But also just because that's kind of how the conversation works. But I think, like, there is something about, like, psychologically when I see this kind of thing, like, whereas I'm mostly immune to things like sales and deals and stuff like that. These kind of, the bundling definitely, like, the way I thought about the Apple service, like, definitely changed in my head, where I was like, oh, I'm not paying for another Netflix. I'm paying for this whole thing that also includes news and, you know, potentially replaces my Spotify, like, subscription. Who knows? Then that starts to be, like, the sort of the threshold where I'm like, all right, I'm willing to sign up for this. Suddenly, I think, you know, becomes a lot lower.
Well, and Apple is in a position to, like, undercut. So if the price of Apple Music stays the same and ends up getting you whatever, we've talked about, like, at least 10 new shows, all of which sound, like, relatively okay, you know, with the exception of, like, new Carpool Karaoke and stuff. Like, you know, a lot of these shows sound pretty good. And if the price stays the same, yeah, that's attractive for sure. But it's all about, like, the legs to stand on, I think. So, and it'll be interesting too. Like, what if the price goes up by $5 for this new video piece and people who have Apple Music and Netflix, for example, are like, screw that shit, you know, like, it could backfire, but I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll keep the price of Apple Music exactly the same and flood it with this content, but I could be wrong. We'll see.
Right. Or, like, Apple Music, the price is exactly the same, pay $1 or $2 more and then you get, by the way, the startup was Texture. You get, you know, Apple News, what used to be Texture, plus Apple TV, or whatever, they're not going to call it Apple TV because that'll be confusing, but whatever they choose to call it, you'll get that as well, and you can get that for just slightly more than Apple Music.
Yeah, and listeners, tweet us your best names for what Apple's over-the-top service should be called. I'm curious what you guys think.
Do you guys have ideas?
I have zero ideas.
Apple Crate. No, I have not. I have nothing.
Oh my god, Apple Crate. Bushel. Yeah, we're bad at it, so we need the tweets for sure. Should we get into reviews since we're covering so much ground today? I feel like, yeah, we should just keep it moving, yeah. What movie do we want to start with?
Maybe we should do A Quiet Place because that's the one that all three of us have seen.
Okay. I think we should start with, like, 2 or 3 minutes of silence and sign it to each other. okay, so I'll start. I'm a huge John Krasinski fan. I have been since The Office. I think I've seen, like, pretty much everything he's been in. Same with Emily Blunt. I think she's fantastic. I love seeing his directorial debut. Like, a lot of that is just, like, my personal feelings. But I thought the movie was just so good, you know, like, it had hints of what was that Mel Gibson movie from a long time ago where the aliens came and the kid had asthma?
Signs.
Signs. Yeah. It had like hints of that, but not to the point where it was like as shitty as that, you know, because I didn't think that was like a great movie, but it had that same like kind of vibe of like terror and anxiety. And I watched all the extras too, because I bought it on iTunes. And so I watched all the extra interviews, and they were talking about the process of making the movie and how like they were reading the script, and it was had like 5 minutes of dialogue. It was something like 80 pages, and like most movies are like 160 pages or something in the script. And they're just like, how do we do this? You know, it's like clever, but like, how do we really pull it off? And I think they did a great job with it. Like I was really captivated the whole time. We even watched, I live in New York. It was like 85 degrees the night that we watched, and we turned the AC off so we could like actually experience the quiet. So I was like sweating as I watched it, and it was totally worth it.
That's awesome.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, so I absolutely loved it. I went to go see it in a theater called the Alamo Drafthouse. It's kind of a chain, but their main thing is that they take the whole the rules of a movie theater very seriously. You know, absolutely no talking. If you talk, you get one stern look, and then you're out with no refund. And they make it very, very, they're very upfront with that policy. And I think that was the best decision I've ever made, because that theater was it was packed wall to wall, but absolutely silent. Like if anybody shuffled a little bit in their seats, everyone heard it, which it was a great decision, but the downside was that it's the kind of theater where you can order food. And it was so hard to eat the food, because it just felt like every single bite that you took was just echoing throughout the, that everyone hated you. And so during all the quiet scenes, no one was moving, no one was eating. And then there was a scene that, without spoiling anything, there might be an extended loud scene, and you just see everyone wolfing down their popcorn and shoving pizza into their face, just trying to eat as much as they could as fast as they could.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so for people who have been living under a rock and don't know what A Quiet Place is, without spoiling anything, the general idea is that it's like a closed, very insular story. There's a family of five, and they are quiet, and something has happened in the world because that has forced them to be quiet. They're bad creatures out there that can hear them if they make even the slightest noise. And so they have to live kind of their life in silence. And it stretches across actually a kind of long amount of time, but the most of the action happens over the course of a couple days where just like they can't catch a break. Like things just are going wrong, you know, like left and right, loud things. But I thought it was special because it was like, on the one hand, yeah, it's like kind of a horror film because there's an imminent threat at any moment. And it's kind of a psychological thriller because the idea of living your life in silence, like being a parent to children who have to be silent, etc., is like fucked up in the head. But it was also like in a lot of ways like a feel-good family movie, because there are a lot of moments where you see... Do you know what I'm saying? Like, not a feel-good family movie, like, for the family to see, but, like, feeling good about the idea of family. You know, like, watching parents sacrifice, watching them still find ways to have fun together and teach each other lessons, make each other feel safe, given that the world has changed so much. Like, that to me was slightly uplifting.
Yeah, there was good family values in it, and also, you know, terrifying monsters. So, it's a nice mix.
Fun fact that I learned. So like the lead daughter actress, I guess she's the only daughter, is an actual deaf person. And they insisted to have someone who is deaf play the role of the deaf person, because she plays a deaf character as well. And her and the brother, who is not deaf, became like really good friends. And he's essentially like almost fluent in sign language now, because they got so close, and she started like kind of teaching him beyond what he needed to learn for the script. And he's like fluent in sign language now. I think John and Emily had a harder time. They really just learned their lines, but I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought one thing that I really liked about it was also in terms of like how it like does the family stuff, or that I thought was really interesting, was the idea of sort of how there's this insane sort of presumably alien invasion that's happened, none of which is sort of explained. I also really liked how the film doesn't go out of its way to explain stuff and sort of expects you to be able to catch up. And then it really shows like how life kind of goes on, that like they have this imminent threat of death hanging over them. But at a certain point, you kind of can't just always be thinking about that. And obviously a lot of it shapes their lives in a lot of ways, but they've also built this life for themselves on this farm, and they still, you know, play games as a family. They're already, you know, they're having another baby, which is kind of crazy. And they have to put all these precautions in place to, like, not have that turn into a disaster. And obviously, I don't think it's a huge spoiler to say that it does play a pretty big role in the plot. But, like, I wrestled with that a little bit, because especially with the teenage daughter, like, she is in some ways this sort of typical teenager of, like, having a kind of complicated relationship with her parents, particularly her father, which on a basic survival level seems, like, really, like, you know, questionable, because, like, you know, sort of stalking off, like, an angry teenager when there are killer aliens around is a little scary. But I think actually, the more I thought about it, I thought felt, like, believable, that you can't just be sort of frightened and fighting for your life all the time. Eventually you just start behaving like a human being again.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially at the point where the movie is taking place, where it's like 6 months or a year after this has already started. So
it's like a year and a half. Yeah, exactly. And like a lot of their lives have happened, like especially the younger ones, obviously, like a lot of their lives have happened under these circumstances. And like, of all people, even in a crisis situation, you can always count on a teenage girl or boy to like, think his problem or his issue is bigger than the world's crisis. You know what I mean? And like react accordingly. That's just like very standard operating procedure. But I think they also did a good job of like weaving in the reason for her to be upset, like bigger than just maybe what happened in the beginning of the movie. I'm trying not to give spoilers, so it's complicated what I'm saying. But like, she wanted to be treated like an adult who could handle situations, which I think a lot of young teenagers do. And you have the umbrella of this situation that they're in and having to be quiet. The second layer of her being deaf and wanting more so more autonomy and independence, I guess, and like to be trusted with bigger problems and issues and tasks. And so you can see the reason why she felt that way. You can also see like her overreaction and leaving. But I don't know. It kept me on the edge of my seat the whole time. I thought it was fantastic, and I loved the ending. I don't know if we can talk about that without spoiling it, but I thought the way that it ended was exactly as it should have been.
Yeah. I don't know how much we can say. I will say that I appreciate how little they shoved down your throat in terms of like kind of how clever these characters actually are and some of the strategies that they come up with to get around and to survive in this world. Like, it was just stuff that they were doing on screen. They weren't like, at no point were they like, this is why we're doing this. Like, let's sit down and explain this to the audience. It's sort of the stuff you notice in the background, like, oh yeah, that's really clever.
I think they did a good job introducing the monsters too. I feel like sometimes with these movies, you either see not enough or too much. And they did a really good job of like building up. Like the first encounter that you see is really just like a blur. Like super fast, you don't really have any idea. You just know it's like fast and powerful, but you don't know anything about what this creature might look like really. And then slowly you get more and more kind of exposure to these aliens or creatures or whatever the hell they are, until at the end you're really getting like some close-up shots of what the hell's going on with them. And I thought they did a good job with that too. Sometimes it can look a little wonky or a little weird. Like I thought this was solid.
And without getting into details, like, the design clearly incorporates the idea that these are aliens that have this incredible sense of hearing in a way that was, like, really cool and also, like, kind of, like, disturbing and gross.
And disgusting. Yeah, yeah. But, like, I mean, you see, well, and it's really well done, too, because he has this deaf daughter, right? So he is very familiar with the function of the ear. He's trying to help her. There's no doctors or anything. And so you're seeing like books on the human ear in the background. Plus you see like close-ups of the ear of the alien, which is just like this expanding cavernous kind of organism of its own. And you're just like, man, that is one hell of an ear, you know?
I will say that this is one of the first movies that I've liked this much that I hope they don't make a sequel to, if that makes sense. I feel like it's it'd be very natural for them to either make a sequel or make other stuff in this universe. And I feel like it's kind of perfect as it is.
I'm pretty sure they're making a sequel.
That kind of bums me out.
I had a lot of, like, just kind of, like, I wish they would have incorporated a little bit more of the, like, basic human functionality. Like, we burp, we sneeze, we fart, we poop. Like, all of those things make noise. Like, I'm not saying I wish they had more farting in the movie, but, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're,
but
like,
one very well-placed fart joke would have been okay.
Yeah, or, like, just one kind of recognition of the fact that, like, yeah, they can purposefully be quiet through a lot of things, you know? Like, it's no spoiler that she's, like, has to go through a pregnancy and deliver a baby. Like, she's silent during the contractions. Like, that I understand. I was watching with my girlfriend's brother, and he was like, how's she gonna give a baby without screaming? And I was like, it's not necessarily compulsory. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure it helps, but, like, I'm pretty sure if a woman needed to give birth silent, they would, you know? But, like, there are certain things that you just, like, can't really control. I guess you can finagle your way to a silent fart, you know, but, like, sneezes and stuff, I don't know, it just seemed like it would be nice to kind of just address it at least once, like, that there are human functions that happen that you can't necessarily stifle.
Yeah, maybe they're saving that one for the sequel.
Maybe, yeah. A Quiet Place 2, Revenge of the Farts.
A Quiet Place 2, Allergy Season.
Oh, that's a good one. You win.
I would also say that, I mean, I really enjoyed it, but, like, I think there are, and this is, like, a simplification, but I think there are some horror movies that are basically these amazing rides, and while you're in the theater, you're having a great time, you're jumping up, you're screaming, and you're, like, really tense, and then you walk out, and it sort of, like, fades away very quickly. And I think A Quiet Place falls, at least for me, very much fell into that category where it was, like, an amazing ride. Haven't necessarily thought about it a ton since, compared to, I think, one of the movies we're not going to talk about in depth today is, like, Hereditary, which is a movie I saw, and I could not sleep that night. And for days afterwards, I was, like, haunted by imagery from. And I don't necessarily think that that is a ding on A Quiet Place, but it just is a different kind of horror movie where you just go, and it's, like, it's a ride for 2 hours.
Well, and I think also with A Quiet Place, like, I haven't put a whole lot of thought into it afterwards, but I think they could have run it. That's not to say that I didn't, like, love it and wouldn't suggest it. And I think where that line is drawn is, okay, there are monsters who can hear everything you do and they want to eat you if you make a noise. Like, that could have become really boring. Like, that could have become, like, a very, like, rote thing. And the situations they put them in where they may be under threat by these creatures, like, were interesting and new every time. Some were expected and some weren't. But in every case, like, it never felt like, oh, the monsters are after him again because someone made a noise again. Like, it was always like, oh, shit, that's going to make noise. Damn it. You know, like, it was an actually necessary and interesting way to kind of have noise be the enemy, I guess. So I liked it, and I think it's a good film.
Yep, I agree. I loved it.
All right, what's the next movie on our list?
How about let's talk about Solo.
Oh, tagging out. Back to the segments where Jordan hasn't seen Star Wars yet.
Right, well, that was what I was going to say, is, like, at some point you're going to have to see it for this, like, completeness, right?
Yeah, we actually have to do that. When did it come out? I can't believe I missed all that. Maybe I'll go see it tonight.
It came out maybe like a month and a half ago, 2 months, something like that.
I wonder if it's still playing at Williamsburg Cinema.
Yeah, it should be. I'm gonna check. Most theaters it'll still be playing.
Okay, you guys discuss. What did we think?
Well, I would say that, so for people, I mean, I assume most people know, but this is a prequel, sort of takes place between the episodes 1 through 3, like the prequel trilogy, and then the main Star Wars movies. And it's about a young Han Solo. And I have to say, I mean, I went in with very low expectations. I kind of saw it later than normal because I had been traveling when it came out. So Brian Heater saw it for TechCrunch and wrote an article about it where he's like, it's a perfectly fine Star Wars movie. I think that was sort of like the consensus among critics, was like, it's okay, it's not great. It actually, you know, didn't do very well at the box office. So I kind of, like, waited a while, thought like I wasn't gonna like enjoy it that much, and I really liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's definitely not like revelatory, or if you're not, you know, someone who likes Star Wars, this is gonna be the movie that like wins you over. But I thought everything about it was pretty charming. I thought like the actor who plays young Han Solo, Alden Ehrenreich, I mean, he, you know, I think that's sort of like an, in some ways a really tough situation to be in, because how can anyone compare to Harrison Ford? But he did, I thought, like a pretty good job of like not trying to imitate him, but just to like create this character who you can see that continuity of, he's this young cocky guy, but like compared to the Han Solo of that we know, he's like much more incompetent. And so he has this confidence that isn't quite like matched by his like skills yet. So overall, I was really impressed with it, and I was kind of bummed out that it didn't do better.
Yeah, this is going to be the most boring discussion ever, because I 100% agree with everything you just said. So there's nothing I can really argue you on. I will say that the first third of it, maybe the first half, felt a little bit trudging. I was a little bit bored by the first half, and then the second half just kicks ass. So
like one of my favorites is probably going to get me in trouble with the Star Wars fanatics, but one of my favorite films is Rogue One.
No, that's fair. Which, Rogue One was good.
I thought it was really good. And it was the first one I saw, actually. And it was
wild.
But it like ended up working out so well, right? Because like that is technically the beginning of the whole story, right? Them stealing the plans for the Death Star. So I loved Rogue One, and I loved it being a standalone. And then I got attached to all those characters, you know, I got attached to Luke and even Anakin and Leia and all these people. I never really cared for Han Solo that much, though. Another unpopular opinion. Like, he was fine, but he was always like such an arrogant cowboy, and it was just like, chill a little bit, you know, like have some chill. So I don't know how I'm going to feel about Solo. I think all I care about really is like a lot of space, like that to me, the space scenes and the fight scenes in space and stuff are like the most fun of all of the Star Wars things to me.
Yeah, there's not a ton of that in Solo. Something you might like about Solo is like Anthony was saying, at this point, he's kind of like, he's still got the cocky cowboy thing going on, but he's really clumsy, and like all like the the clever tricks that he's trying to pull off aren't working quite well. So it's kind of fun to see him at that state.
Yeah, I like that. And I would die for Donald Glover, so I gotta see it anyway.
Yeah, and he kills it like you'd expect, so.
Yeah, of course he does.
I will say that I didn't think he was bad in this movie, but I think that was the one aspect that everyone was like, this movie's okay, Donald Glover's amazing. And I thought, I wasn't crazy about his performance, because that to me felt a little bit more like you could feel him sort of performing and, like, you know, taking certain elements from Billy Dee Williams's performance. So I didn't quite love it as much as everyone else did. Like, if I had to pick an MVP from the movie, I would say it was probably Alden Ehrenreich, and then the actress who plays the droid.
So, wait, I have a question, another one. Remind me about, because everybody made a big deal about how Solo story would show like a certain card game, but remember, I like rushed through, not rushed, but I like watched all of those movies one time exactly, like all back to back, and I don't know what they were talking about. What is the card game?
So it's supposed to be the card game in which Han Solo wins the Millennium Falcon from Lando.
But there has only been reference to that in the movies, but we never saw it. So they're showing it. I see. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So is it a must see? Like I guess it's must see for me, but.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it felt a little bit like fan fiction in a way. And I'm okay with that. To be honest, if they continue to do these spinoff movies, and I mean, it felt like fan fiction in the sense that it didn't feel like a kind of classic Star Wars movie. It felt a little bit removed from that. And I'm totally 100% okay with that. I almost hope that with these spin-off movies, with these every other year movies, they continue to go with that. They don't try to make it fit this Star Wars mold. Have something that exists in the Star Wars universe that has characters that we know and love, but experiments a little bit.
Yeah, I would also point out that, I mean, I don't think it's a must-see. I mean, I think it's pretty good. It's not like an amazing sort of culture-shaping movie the way like Black Panther was. But it you know, if you like science fiction and you like adventure movies, I think it's like definitely worth your time, and not to necessarily let some of the like more negative discussion dissuade you. I will also say I somehow managed to convince my girlfriend, who has seen up until now has seen exactly one Star Wars movie, the original Star Wars, and none of the others. I convinced her to go see this with me, and she had a great time. And like, she is just someone who generally is very bored by special effects and action sequences. And there were multiple times where she kind of just leaned over to me and said, "This is really cool." So I think it's also just like a very accessible Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I can totally see that. So yeah, I think the vote is Jordan, go see it.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to anyway, just to keep the whole sitch up. But okay, cool. I'm down for that. What's our next movie?
Let's talk about Incredibles 2, which I have not seen. Jordan, you've seen it.
What?
Incredibles 2? No?
Oh, yeah. I saw Incredibles 2.
Okay. For a second, I thought you were like, no, none of us has seen it.
Just curveball. You know how I do. Yeah, no, I saw it. Nobody else saw it, though, right? I'm the only one? Okay, so... context, I did not see Incredibles 1, which came out like what, like 13 years ago? I was but a child.
Or 14, yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's like bad timing too, because I was like a teenager, so it wasn't like I was a kid, but it wasn't like I was old enough to go enjoy a cartoon either, so I missed that. But I thought Incredibles 2 was fantastic. There were a couple things that bothered me a little bit about it. So like the general premise of Incredibles 2 is that Elastigirl is kind of fighting for like being an advocate for superheroes becoming legal again, I guess, and she is going to be the main stage superhero, and Mr. Incredible has to stay at home with the kids. That's like the general theme of the movie, but he's so upset about it, like he's so whiny and angry about it, and it just like that to me falls into these themes that I get uncomfortable about. But other than that, I thought it was so cute and funny. The little baby is one of the best parts of the movie, like him realizing his superpowers and like laughing in Mr. Incredible's face is like one of the best parts of the movie. I read, so like apparently like the New York Times, I didn't realize all of this, but the New York Times like film critic got like super like horny about Elastigirl in his review, and apparently that's like a big thing, like a bunch of people are hot for Elastigirl.
Was it, I think it might have been the New Yorker film critic Anthony Lane.
You're probably right. Sounded a little risque for the Times.
And I mean, Anthony Lane is sort of notorious for like, he did this like profile of Scarlett Johansson a few years ago, which I have not read, but you know, was sort of widely sort of denounced as basically being like, you know, this kind of thing that's just like, you know, thousands of words about how hot Scarlett Johansson is.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't like have like really in-depth analysis for Incredibles 2 because I don't think it requires that, but it's like really fun film to see. And as a bonus, so the movie itself is like a little over 2 hours, but there's also a short film at the beginning, like an animated short film about like, I mean, I don't even want to ruin it, but it's so cute. Like you start, so it's actually funny. We went to go see it in the theater and the cast, like the voices of the cast are on screen in this little promo video being like, "We know you waited a really long time for The Incredibles to come back, like, and yeah, we're sorry that it took so long, but like it was totally worth the wait. Like you are gonna love this movie. It's so good." Like Samuel Jackson and all these folks like telling you how great this movie's gonna be. And then it goes straight into this animated film, this animated short film, and you're like, "What am I watching?" You know, like is this Incredibles? Especially me, because I hadn't seen the first one. I was like, "This doesn't look like what I've seen," you know? But then the short film's really cute. And then Incredibles 2 starts, also very cute. There's a character that everybody says is like the spitting image of Kristen Stewart, which is true. She really is. Although the character herself might be a little bit more enthusiastic than anything I've seen Kristen Stewart do before. But all in all, good film. I don't really know what else to say about it. It's a solid animated film.
So I have a question that maybe get into a little spoiler territory for the animated short beforehand, which is, so it's called Bao, right? And it's about the, you know, like the Chinese buns. But like, is it like where like the Bao characters are eating Bao? Like it's like you're eating yourself?
No, I think it's more a symbol for parenthood. Okay. So like she, so what I think happens, if you're upset about spoilers, just like mute for 30 seconds because I'm actually going to talk about it. So it starts with her making little Bao buns or dumplings or whatever, like steamed dumplings. And one of them, right as she's like about to bite it, like comes alive and like grows little arms and legs and has this big old smile. And she spends every day with it and it grows bigger and she like protects it and they eat little like sweet pastries together. And she takes it to the park to do Tai Chi and all this stuff. And then it gets older and meets a girl and wants to go play with his friends and starts like, you know, leaving the house and being like, screw you, mom, you know, and like comes back with this girlfriend and he says, we're going to get married. And he starts packing his bags and leaving and he's gone. And she stops him from getting out the door and eats him. And like swallows him and starts crying and is so upset. And then her real son.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's really upsetting. And everyone in the theater was like, what the fuck? And then her actual son, like her, the father like pushes her actual son into the room. And like, I think that the bow itself was all just like a symbol for like her son having like gone through that process and leaving the house, and they kind of ended on bad terms. And he comes back and like has a sweet pastry with her and brings his new blonde white wife home, and they all make dumplings together. So I think it's like the idea of like, you know, getting back your kids when they rebel and leave or kind of become disconnected, and her kind of having empty nest syndrome. I think it's all centered around that idea.
All right, that's fair. I will admit that I think partly because I always get a little bit uncomfortable with like the kind of like kid stories or family films or animated films where our food comes to life. And then you're like, oh my God, we've been eating them, and they've been like, we've been like torturing them by eating them for like the past, you know, forever, which I guess is sort of like the theme of that movie Sausage Party, where like all the like groceries try to escape or whatever. But
upsetting.
I find that your description a little bit disturbing, but I'm going to check it out for myself.
Well, I didn't make the film, so.
No, that's, I'm not blaming you. Just an observation.
But yeah, I thought it was actually super cute. I was really upset when she ate it, but then I realized it was just kind of in her head, I think. I hope.
So I was actually hoping to see Incredibles 2 this past weekend. I went with my roommate who has a movie pass, and so we kind of didn't buy the tickets ahead of time. We were just going to wander down over to Williamsburg Cinema and watch it. But then it turned out Incredibles 2 was sold out. And so instead we watched the movie that I guess we can move on to, which is Ocean's 8, which I really enjoyed. I think this is the kind of, sequel/reboot of the, /soft reboot of like the Ocean's 11 franchise, except instead of having a team that's all guys, it's all women, led by Sandra Bullock and Kate Blanchett. And I definitely didn't love the first half of it. I thought like the first half was a little bit kind of dragged and like the characters weren't super interesting. But like once it got into the actual heist portion, I was pretty on board.
So you said you weren't really into them gathering the people, but then once they got into the heist, you were down with it?
Right, which is not normally how, like normally I really like the putting the team together like sequences, but for some reason, it really did not click for me at all. And I was like noticing that I was definitely kind of like looking at my watch a lot during that part. I was like, eh, this is all right. This is not great, though. And then once all the different machinery of actually like stealing these jewels goes into place, and once you get into like the fashion world cameos and all that stuff, I really like that. I think part of it was also because I think for me, my favorite character was the Anne Hathaway character who's like this like movie star. And I will also say that I like am like one of the few people who like has always found Anne Hathaway to be incredibly likable. And which I mean, I don't know why, but like, you know, obviously there are a lot of people on the internet who like really don't like her. I find it completely mystifying. But she was the best part of the movie, I thought, and like she definitely plays a bigger role as the movie goes on.
Yeah, no, I think so. Like, I'm not in either camp on Anne Hathaway. Like, I've liked almost everything she's ever been in. I find her to be like an outstanding performer. I think where like people are bothered by Anne Hathaway is that she just doesn't feel genuine, or she feels like genuinely like she's trying to feel genuine. I don't know. It's like very confusing in like interviews and stuff. Yeah. She's just like that girl that's trying too hard to be the cool casual girl. I think I saw a meme about it once where it was like Jennifer, like Anne Hathaway is trying to be Jennifer Lawrence, you know, like in person, like be that kind of comfortable, funny best friend type. And it's just not who she is really. But I will say that I've never been more delighted by an Anne Hathaway performance. Like it actually played in the character that she played, played into people's idea of Anne Hathaway as being this like very kind of self-centered, like superficial actress, like movie star type. And she just nailed it so much, and it was so funny. Every single line was so wonderful. And I just couldn't get enough of that character. I really couldn't. I thought it was so good. And Sandra Bullock and Kate Blanchett did a great job too. I thought Mindy Kaling was great. Rihanna didn't really get very many lines, but she did what she needed to with what she was given. I thought the most underutilized character was the suburban mom. What is that actress's name?
Sarah Paulson.
Yeah. I thought she was like one of the more underutilized players because she's a really funny actress. And the situation she was in with having a kid and stuff, I don't know. I just felt like it could have been exploited a little bit more.
Had you seen the other Oceans movies?
Oh, yeah. I own them on iTunes. I watch them on planes all the time.
Interesting. Yeah, because I'd seen the first one and liked it a lot, but it didn't make me think, like, man, I, like, really need to watch the sequels. And I will say, though, I did think, like, I probably enjoyed that one a little bit more just because I found, like, the particularly, like, George Clooney as the lead a little bit more compelling than I found Sandra Bullock. Also, I mean, because they made this sort of interesting decision for Ocean's 8 where the Sandra Bullock character plays Danny Ocean's sister, and he is dead, or at least officially dead, but no one sort of knows. There's sort of this hint that maybe something else
happened. He might be alive. Like, yeah. He might have just ran off to a beach or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but that, like, so there are, like, multiple scenes where Sandra Bullock is at Danny Ocean's tomb, and it just feels, it's not, like, they're not terrible scenes, but they just seem tonally kind of off from this, you know, very kind of, like, fun, effervescent film. And they also mean that, like, she's just, like, very explicitly in the shadow of this other character.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it would have helped if, like, and, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but it would have helped if there was some mention or reference of his sister in the earlier films as kind of being almost, they almost feel competitive in their ability to con, you know what I mean? And I think that was probably the reason why they never actually confirmed that he was, like, actually dead, why they kind of left it open to interpretation, because I think there's opportunity for that competition to continue on potentially. And I had a lot of friends who I went to go see it with who theorized that, you know, the reason it was Ocean's 8 is to leave room for 9 and 10. So maybe we'll see something else come of that. I liked how they kind of like balanced like gender, the idea of gender here, because they're stealing diamonds, right? Like they're stealing jewelry, which is funny, but they're doing it in a very masculine way, right? Like getting this whole team together and kind of conning the shit out of everyone. I don't know, I just felt like that was an interesting kind of play on everything. I think it could have ended up being a little bit like, oh, how stereotypical, like a bunch of girls getting together to steal jewelry, but they subverted that, I think, with the cleverness.
Well, and also by just having the opportunity of having eight different women. So I think, like, in so many other movies, you may have, you know, one female character who's the quote-unquote strong female character, but she has to sort of stand in for all women, whereas, like, by having eight, you can represent a wide variety of experiences. Also, you can have, you know, non-straight women, you could have women of color, and you know, it's you know, have a much more diverse crew, even if it's still led by straight white women.
Yeah. Did you guys see that? I think there was a spoof. It might have been on SNL, or maybe it was on, like, The Break with Michelle Wolf or something, where it was, like, movies featuring a strong female lead, the movie.
I think I heard about it, but didn't get a chance to watch it.
That's pretty funny. It was from, like, you know, how Netflix always has that category of, like, movies with a strong female lead, and she, like, parodied that as its own movie. It was pretty cute.
So that was on Michelle Wolf, and speaking of which, I really enjoy that show.
Me too, man. I really enjoy her. Like, there was a lot to be said after the Correspondents' Dinner, and, like, people have their own opinions on that. I think she absolutely just did her job, you know? She was supposed to poke fun, and she poked fun. But her, I don't know if you've seen her comedy specials and stuff too, Greg, but, like, her Netflix special is so funny. Like, she walked out, that was my first kind of exposure to her, and she walked out on stage and her voice is so bizarre and weird and, like, annoying, and then, like, it only takes you 2 minutes to be like, I love her voice, I love her, I love everything about her, I love everything she says, she's so funny. Like, she won me over instantly, and I've been really enjoying The Break. Like, I think they could cut down, actually, on the spoofs and parodies. I would rather her do more stand-up and interviews, but even then, I like it. I really like it. It feels like the parodies are almost filler, you know? Like, let's just get to what... I just want to hear you talk, you know?
Yeah, to some degree. I think, and this is true of a lot of this Daily Show style shows. I feel like the first half of the show, the first third of the show is definitely the strongest, and it's the part I enjoy the most. But overall, if they figure out the rest of it a little bit more, I love it.
Well, and I like doing games with interviewees. I think that's, like, a fun mechanism for an interview if you're not Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel, where you're getting, like, you know, I don't know, Meryl Streep up there. Like, I could just watch an interview with Meryl Streep. She could be asked, like, what did you eat for breakfast? And I'd be like, I need to know. Like, I am enraptured, you know? But, like, she doesn't have that level of guest yet. And so I like the mechanism of, like, playing games with them. Like, oh, like, I think one was, like, you have to tell the truth. Or, like, likes and dislikes or stuff like that. Like, and they did, like, children. And Hannibal Buress was like, I hate children. Children are the worst, you know? Like, it's pretty funny. And you can get some good quotes out of that.
Pretty good Hannibal Buress impression there.
I thought it was pretty good, right?
Yeah, solid.
Like, it startled me how good it was.
He was just somewhere inside you.
I guess so. I just felt him. Okay, do we have another movie or are we out?
I think we have one last one that I figured we should at least touch on, Avengers Infinity War,
which came out just,
like, a little bit before the summer, but has, you know, made an insane amount of money, like, biggest opening weekend of all time. I think it's, like, now, like, the only movies that have made more money are Star Wars and Avatar. Titanic and Avatar. And, like, oh, and I guess domestically, Star Wars Force Awakens has made more money. But anyway, it made a crazy amount of money, one of the biggest movies of all time. And I've talked a little bit around the podcast and written up for TechCrunch about that, you know, I had reservations, but overall had a good time. Greg, what did you think?
How spoilery are we getting here?
I don't think it matters at this point. It's been out for, like, 3 months.
Are you comfortable, Jordan, as someone, you haven't seen it, right, Jordan?
Yeah, and I might not, so I don't really care.
Okay. All right, let's say this because this one has been out for a long time. Everyone who really wants to see it has seen it. Let's say this is spoilery.
My greatest exposure to Infinite War is having Thanos do a brief stint on Fortnite.
Okay.
Just to clarify.
So we know that Thanos is the big bad.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah. so kind of the shortest possible version of the plot is that Thanos is trying to collect these stones so that he might rule the rules of the universe. You know, he controls effectively everything.
Thanos does? This,
what's that? Once he collects all of these Infinity Stones.
Okay.
Which has been what all of the Marvel movies have been kind of culminating to, and what this kind of this movie kind of speeds up the pacing is him getting his hands on all of them so that he might control literally everything, time and physics and whatnot. And his goal, it's revealed, since we're getting super spoilery, is to effectively extinguish half of the universe because he feels that we're running out of resources and that this is the only answer. If he just kills or gets rid of half of the people in the universe, then everyone, the other half will be saved. So he's ultimately doing a good thing, so he thinks. But so at the end of the movie, and again, we are getting super spoilery here, so if you haven't seen it and you care about spoilers, stop this and run away and smash your speaker or whatever, because we're going to reveal the ending.
Smash your speaker. We're going to get like bills in our email.
You don't even know. I break so many speakers every day.
To avoid spoilers. Every time I get a spoiler alert on BuzzFeed, I just throw my laptop out the window.
But so he is successful in getting all the Infinity Stones and squeezes his fist together and extinguishes half of the universe. And that includes half or at least half of the heroes in the Marvel universe that we've met so far.
Oh my God, they all die?
Yeah, sorry for ruining that for you. And it's brutal, but it's unclear where we go from here because there are still a bunch of other Marvel movies. There isn't more, including ones with heroes that supposedly die. So, Anthony, do you have theories?
Right. So, if I were to guess, I mean, I think so. In the movie, there are multiple characters who die even before the scene. Like, the movie opens basically with, like, the slaughter of most of the supporting cast of Thor Ragnarok. And then there's other characters, there's at least one other, like, notable character who dies in the course of the film. And I think those characters are going to stay dead. Those are meant to be deaths that are not going to be, or if they're going to get reversed, they're not going to get reversed right away. It is kind of like comics where characters do come back. But then I think what is going to happen is all those other characters who died at the end, and they die in this very distinctive way where they sort of like dissolve into like black sand. I think all of them are going to get brought back probably at close to the end of the next film, because I think one of the things they did is I think they've been very open about is a lot of the main survivors are the original Avengers, and so it's basically many of whom probably are not going to want to be in many more Marvel films after the next Avengers movie. So it's sort of this like last hurrah for Robert Downey Jr., for Chris Evans. They're gonna kind of, that core team is somehow gonna find a way to bring everyone back. I think that's probably what the fourth film is about.
So tell me who died.
Ooh.
Lots and lots and lots of people.
The ones that people sort of are like, this is definitely gonna get reversed. Black Panther dies. Most of the cast of Black Panther dies. Spider-Man dies. Most of the Guardians of the Galaxy die.
I don't know who those people are, but okay. Thor? Is he one of those?
No, he survives because he's part of that core. But Loki dies at the beginning.
Did Wolverine
and
die?
I actually think Wolverine is not in the Avengers movie.
I just looked up top Marvel heroes, so I have a list in front of me.
Let's see. Well, yeah, so I think that's one that's actually going to stick. I think Tom Hiddleston is done with Marvel. I think Idris Elba, whose character, I think is Heimdall, he gets killed off. I think he's done. So I think there are some people who are leaving. I think there'll probably be more deaths in the next one.
Yeah, the theory that I'm kind of following most, and the one I think I'm hoping is true. I don't know how they're going to pull it off, but this idea that Thanos, instead of actually killing them, just kind of split the universe into two.
Right.
We didn't actually see them die. We just saw them kind of warped. If he took 50% of people and put them in their own little universe with their own resources, because that would thus fulfill his requirements in the same way.
Here's an important question. Did Thanos die?
No.
Oh. What is that overlooking, Anthony?
Oh, just that Thanos' plan, like, of removing half the life in the universe is, like, really stupid. But, or, like, very strange and arbitrary. And from what I think there have definitely been articles about, like, how, like, it sort of echoes some of these, like, theories about population control from the past that have, like, been revealed to be sort of nonsense. I mean, given that his plan is very silly, like, Josh Brolin does a very good job of, like, making this giant purple character with a crazy plan feel like a real person with like real desires and real conviction to pursue this very, you know, weird goal.
I don't know. I feel like we're on the same page in the end though, that there's no way that they're getting rid of Tom Holland within this universe. There's no way that they're getting rid of Chadwick Boseman within this universe. There are so many actors that they killed off and actresses that they killed off that are like, just coming, this just starting to kind of explode and become the new faces, that there's no way that a lot of the deaths at the end are final.
Yeah, I would say that I hope that when those characters come back, though, it'll either be in their own movies or at the very end of the next Avengers movie. Because what one of the main reservations I had about Infinity War is it just felt like there were too many characters. A lot of the characters sort of got short shrift where they kind of show up and then they're just like another body in these giant action scenes. And so to me, like, that is fine if the ending of this movie is setting up a much smaller group of characters for the next film. If they all come back, like, or you know, we're just constantly cutting to this parallel universe in Avengers 4, I think that would still have many of the same problems that Infinity War had for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I'm pretty sure that because Avengers 4 was originally called Infinity War 2, right?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that Avengers 4 will just basically start off exactly where Infinity War left off, and it's just going to be them working out how to get people back.
Right. So Jordan, now that we've spoiled the whole movie for you, does that make it more or less likely that you'll see it?
About the same. I think if I was on a plane ride, because what's been happening lately is I've been on planes too much and I have seen all the movies. So I think if it came out and there wasn't something else that I wanted to see, it would be like my fallback movie on a plane. That's the way I think about it.
Okay.
Yeah, but maybe someone in my friend group or something will get really amped on it and I'll end up seeing it. I don't know. We'll just have to see how it goes.
We've totally failed to convince you to see it. Is there anything else we should cover with Infinity War, or should we wrap her up?
I do like the idea that they did something really shocking. I read something recently where who is it? The guy that plays he was in Thor Ragnarok. Maybe he plays Hulk. What's that guy's name?
Oh, Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo was doing an interview with the guy who plays Iron Man, Downey Jr., and he, like, almost gave away that everybody died, or, like, kind of did give away that everybody died, but Downey Jr. kind of saved it. He, like, tried to turn it into a joke, but it was from, like, way before the movie came out.
I think so. What that was, I think, if it's the same video that I'm thinking of, it was actually with Don Cheadle, who's also in the Iron Man movies.
Yeah, it was Don Cheadle, you're right.
Yeah. And, like, it's actually really amazing to watch because he basically does get Mark Ruffalo basically does give it away in this way that he thinks is being cryptic. But once you see an Infinity War, you're like, no, that's the ending of Infinity War. and, like, Don Cheadle, like shouts very loudly, like, dude! And then Mark Ruffalo is like, oh, no. And you can see, like, he is not – this isn't, like, two friends joking around. Like, Mark Ruffalo is like, I'm fired. Like, I'm in so much trouble right now. And, like, and then he's like, what should I do? Like, do you, you know, like, can we, like, and Don Cheadle's like, no, like, let's stop talking about this. We're going to move on. And then we're going to talk, like, we got to move on, man. We just got to move on. It'll be fine. But, like, they're genuinely frightened of, like, what he's just done.
Yeah, no, that's what I was talking about, is, like, the moment that they look at each other and are like, oh. Like, we're in so much trouble.
But no one figured it out.
It was only until after the movie came out and people were like, yo, Mark Ruffalo, like, told us this was gonna happen. anyway, well, I had fun on this episode. I hope all of our listeners had fun with our summer movie madness episode.
Madness.
Thank you again, Greg, for joining us, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for having me. Sorry, my voice is a little bit messed up, but
no, it was awesome. It was like great. Just this incredible manliness, which
full of timber. You know, it gave me like Daryl vibes because we, you know, he used to be here all the time. All that timber, low voice.
And then I'll just close with my normal exhortation that you should, if you enjoy the podcast, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app of your choice, and thank you again.